The recording has started.
Yay! Thank you. What great teamwork. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Healing Grief 101, where we're taking tears of pain into tears of joy. We are very excited about that. And my name is Kimberly Reed, and I enjoy coaching people that especially people who have experienced deep trauma and helping them to restore their balance of joy back into their lives and to love themselves again. And I am delighted to partner with Karen Packwood, who is in the UK. And she and I were led to this amazing work back in the summer, what, about 2-3 months ago, I guess, something like that. And we were just guided by spirit to bring Healing Grief 101 to you, and we are thrilled to be getting reports of how it is shifting people in the right direction and getting them on the move to feeling better about themselves and their life and their situations all over the planet. We had somebody from France call in earlier today, and I was very excited that so many people are excited about the Healing Grief movement, and we're delighted for those of you who can attend live today. Thank you for our friends that are supporting this. And for those of you who will listen to the recording, we bless you as well, and we welcome you, and we thank you for being on the journey with us. So, Karen, would you like to go through a very brief meditation to get us all present and centered before
yes,
we begin with Ms. Carr-Jones?
Yes, I can do that. Thank you, Kimberly. Yes, so let's just begin by closing our eyes. We like to begin with this at the beginning of each of our interviews, just to keep us all connected with the sacred circle that we began at the beginning of the week, and to remind ourselves that we are in a sacred place of healing. We are here to help each other, to support each other, and to nurture each other with the deepest love. So let's just close our eyes, take ourselves into a very beautiful space, a very peaceful and loving space. Just be still for a moment. Many of us here, as speakers, are here because we have ourselves experienced deep trauma and deep grief. And you, our listeners, are here because you yourselves are experiencing grief and trauma in your lives. We want you to know that you are not alone, that we care for you and we love you because we have been there as well. We want you to know that you are definitely not alone and that there is light at the end of the very dark tunnel and that there is gold within the darkness. Even if you might not feel that that is the case at this moment in time, we want you to know that there is a way of finding a positive way forward with your life. So we just want you to know we're with you, we love you, we care. And I'll pass you back over now to Kimberly, who's leading the call today. Thank you, Kimberly.
We are delighted. Thank you, Karen, for leading us and helping us to be more present with our hearts open for our next caller. I'm just going to introduce her now. Ms. Kara Jones and I just met very, very recently, but I'm already thinking she's my new best friend. I'm just loving her energy, and I am loving her story and how she turned her pain into her mission and in loving people who went through what she did and giving them support when she did not have any. So Ms. Kara Jones, she's sometimes known as Mother Henna. She is mother to 3 dead sons, a living son, and a daughter. She also has 3 amazing grandchildren, who she probably has pictures of and would love to share. She is a graduate of Carnegie Mellon University, where she concurrently did a 3-year mentorship with Fred Rogers, Hedda Sharapan, and David Newell at Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. How cool is that? I totally watched that when I was a kid.
Right.
She is author and of the book Mrs. Duck and Woman, among others, and co-founder of both Coda Press and Creative Grief Studio. Through creativegriefstudio.com and in partnership with Kath Duncan of Remembering for Good, she offers creative grief education for professionals through a four-month certification program. In her private practice, she is the coach and heart, with A-R-T capitalized, heartist, behind the words at griefandcreativity.com and motherhenna.com. Her artworks are available in the Redbubble Gallery at motherhenna.redbubble.com. We welcome Miss Jones. Miss Kara, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you today, Kimberly?
We are blissified, I do believe, by having all of these wonderful calls, and you just happen to be the receiving end of
it. I love it.
The one at 6 o'clock this morning for me when I was still, I think, half asleep. So anyway, welcome, welcome, welcome. You have an amazing story, and for whatever reason, Spirit called us together this week for me to minister to you, it sounds like, to really hear what you're about and what you've called to do, and for me to have you bless our Healing Grief Nation with your story. So would you tell us about losing your children and how hard and awful that must have been for you?
Sure. You know, I talked to Karen a little bit earlier, too, and I was telling her that, you know, just like your experiences with each of your children is different, the experiences with each of the three deaths was really different. And when the second and third deaths happened, we had a completely different life in place. We understood what this kind of grief meant, and we understood how to ask for the help we needed, and we had some networks in place. But the first death with our son Dakota was really the one that just, you know, knocked me into another universe. He was a full term, perfectly healthy, no complications, pregnancy that we had no indication was going to go any other way than the way successful, I know that's a lousy word, but live birth outcome would happen. And to go from that, you know, having the nursery, having a baby shower, having my husband change his life and work so that I could change my life and work to be a stay-at-home mom, and our older children getting ready for their brother to be born, you know, all of those things, prenatal yoga class and birthing class and all those things, that's the network you have in place. To go from that to these flashes I have of what happened, including things like one of our doctors sort of pressed against a door. I can remember seeing her hand was pressed. It was white. It was so pressed. And she was just saying, "I'm so sorry." And hearing the other doctor who I had full expectations I would hear her eventually say, "It's a boy." To hear the words come out of her mouth, "This baby is dead." Your brain can't even make sense of it.
It just doesn't even process.
No. Mm-mm. This doesn't compute at all. You know what? Some of what I was telling Karen earlier, too, is in some ways it's so odd that his death that's traumatic enough, but it was sort of like the first step in this long sort of cascade of things. Because we didn't have a network in place, and we didn't even know how to language what was happening to us or how to form questions for what we needed. And his death was the start, you know, that was the spark that lit the whole thing. But I'll give you an example. I ended up having a C-section. So I was pretty drugged for about 3 days on pain medications. And in those 3 days, I wanted nothing to do with anybody. I didn't want to see him. I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't really want my husband to even touch me. I mean, I wanted him to be there, but I wanted to turn and look at the wall. Just get away. When I got sober off the pain medication, however, I changed my mind. And it started to dawn on me that this was it. If I was going to make memories, this was it. And so we asked to have him brought to us then. And unfortunately, sometimes, regardless of the MD and the PhD and the MSW and whatever, sometimes people just aren't very good at their jobs. The social worker who was supposed to be our advocate said to me, "You signed the paperwork 3 days ago. You can't have him back."
What?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
So can you see why I started on a mission pretty quickly to, try to have something else?
Holy moly!
I mean, so that was the beginning of the story. It was like the one person who was in place to be the family advocate.
Wow.
And it just kept
unbelievable.
From there, you can't, am I going to go back to my prenatal yoga class reunion and, network with all those mothers who had live babies? No, I'm not. What am I going to do? The prenatal yoga instructor had no idea what to do with me. So it was just that whole, it was his death. Yes, that was absolutely, it was overwhelming. It sucked. I hated it. I didn't want to be there. And it was this cascade of everything else that happened. And for all of us, I mean, my children, our older children didn't know how do you language when, I think they were in junior high. How do you language to your friends that your baby brother was born dead? And we didn't know how to help them. We had no clue.
I can kind of relate to that. In high school, when I was a junior in high school, my stepmother gave birth to what they thought was one baby, was going to be one. They ended up being Siamese twins. Mm-hmm. And back in the day where they didn't always do ultrasound and such, and so they didn't even know that it was two babies at that point because their hearts beat in unison, so they could only hear one heartbeat, which is beautiful. So brother to a drunk driver, and then delivered these babies 3 days later and went through a horrible delivery time. And so it just really, it was just so shocking to have so much loss at one time, and
yeah.
Nobody knew what to do for me either. I wasn't there specifically, to help that part of my family because I was with my other parent, but there aren't really resources for that. But I just sat in my meditation and did quilting and
yes.
needle crafts for
yeah.
a week.
Yes.
To process. So yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why Karen and I really wanted to bring this out, is to let people know that there are resources, there are people that have gone through, maybe not at the exact set of circumstances, but there's enough similarity to all of these stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Want to offer this week, and I know that's why you're excited about being here.
Yeah.
Kara?
Hello?
Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
The sound keeps coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I was...
Kimberly. Go ahead.
It's such a different... It is such a different world in a way today, because there are so many other resources.
Thankfully.
I don't know if you've heard of the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep organization.
No, I haven't. Tell us about that.
They're out of, I think Cheryl started it in Colorado, but she's got photographers all over the world now, I think. They train, professional photographers will volunteer, and they take a training about how to work with families in perinatal hospice situations. And the photographers actually come in and help the families make memories. And the photographers end up being family advocates. They end up saying to the nurses, we want the child back. Will you get a nice pretty hat? You know, we'd like to take pictures of the family bathing the baby. And they become this, you know, it's an interesting thing for me to see all of these things developing, because I have all these pangs of, like, jealousy and envy of, like, oh, I wanted one of those.
I'll just interject there. I've seen those pictures, and they are done so tastefully.
They're beautiful.
They're so beautiful, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just stunning.
I'm so glad that there's that resource.
Yeah. And there are other things for siblings now, like the Center Incorporation. They have just this huge library of books for siblings, workbooks for teenagers, picture books for young kids. There's so much out there now. It's really amazing to see. It's really different than the traumatic sort of shattering that happened for us in the moment back in the day.
Wow. So, how do you feel, or what was your sense of how others viewed this event?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, it was a really hard thing to part of that early trauma and having everything shattered and not having language just made me very spiky, very touchy. And so how other people viewed things, you know, I'll give you an example. We got a card from a friend's mother who said, oh, my son told me, I'm so sorry to hear about your miscarriage, and, you know, and I hope you're doing better. And we had a great vacation with our grandchildren. This was, you know, a card, like she'd written like a letter inside the card. And I cannot tell you how much anger rose in me that she didn't even really understand what had happened to us. It did, the language of his birth didn't matter to her. And that's not really the truth necessarily. Do you know what I'm saying? This is my own subjective.
That was your perception.
Place,
yeah.
Right?
That was
my perception. The other thing was that it was a very hard thing to talk about creating support and perinatal hospice and these spaces of support for other women. Because many of my friends and my background was very liberal, left-leaning politics here in the United States. And though many of those same friends came to my baby shower, and we would talk about my baby, they did not come to my fetus shower.
Yeah.
The moment he died at birth, That social personhood, Linda Lane writes about this in the book called Motherhood Lost, the social personhood, politics aside, whatever, I don't care about your legal things, your medical things, whatever, social personhood, you came to my baby shower. When he was born dead, that social personhood for some people disappeared.
Wow.
So here I am wrestling with what is my relationship now to my son. I have one kind of relationship with our living son and another kind of relationship with our living daughter because they're different people. What is my relationship with this son who died? I'm trying to wrestle through this. I couldn't language it for you in the moment. Now I can talk about it.
Right.
What is my language with this son who died? And there are people around me who don't want to call him a son or a baby.
Really? Wow.
It messes with abortion politics if you go down the politics line of things.
Right.
I understood, you know, there's a rational part of me that understood, but the emotional and motherhood and friendship and sisterhood person part of me was like, oh, really? Really? We're going to do this?
Wow.
So
I would have never thought that.
Yeah.
Thank you for enlightening me.
Yeah, it's a weird space. On the other hand, there were tons of other people who were like, yep, totally get it. Or maybe they didn't get it, but they were just willing to be present.
Right.
And we had plenty of, you know, and especially as we went on with our journey and met other people who had whatever their loss experiences were, and you can share that kind of sacred space. Of course, that shifted over time, you know. So my view of how other people viewed things has changed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Perspective and hindsight tends to do that.
Yeah.
Karen, do you want to interject?
Yeah, Cara, I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about, you talked a little bit about not having the terminology, the words to use, and other people didn't have those. And I know that you created your own vocabulary, and you described, you created something called a different kind of parenting and being unsuicidal.
Yeah,
so I was just
yeah.
wondering if you could share with the audience a little bit about that.
Sure. It was, there were so many things that were happening in those moments that we didn't, it just didn't seem to be words for it. There wasn't a term for it. And one of the main first things that happened to me was the sense of being a mother who, my milk had come in, my arms ached, I was in a pattern like somebody else would be if they had a living newborn, being awake in the wee hours, you know. I just wanted to be with my child, okay, but my child's dead. Now, I wasn't suicidal. I was not planning to kill myself. It wasn't like that, but I wanted to be with my kid, and it was so hard to explain that to people. And so I came up with the term unsuicidal, that sort of encompassed this, this space of my whole body and being were driven to want to be with my child, but my child was dead. How do I make sense of that? And an interesting thing happened as I started sharing that with other people. I started having other bereaved parents pop up and say, oh, I call this. They have their own definitions. We ended up publishing something called the Dictionary of Loss. Through Coda Press, which was something that I co-founded with my husband, named after Dakota. And so we published this dictionary of loss that just contained all the words and definitions that people sent me.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was fascinating to me that I felt so alone that I was making up this language, and yet I got on the internet and started connecting with other people, and there were lots of other people making up their own words too. It was great.
Mm. And you didn't feel so alone.
And they didn't feel so alone. Yeah.
That's quite an interesting point, isn't it, about the internet and how different that would have been before for parents before the internet, actually. If I think back to the story that I shared at the beginning of this week of my nephew passing, and there was nothing out there for my brother or his wife, and they certainly have not been able to sort of go on with a healthy grieving process. So there's a real sort of, that's quite an interesting point about how the internet can help and support people in this kind of a situation.
Yeah. We accessed, many things in person, but the truth was that it was often 3 a.m. when I felt the most despair and wanted somebody, and there's no in-person support group at the local church basement at 3 a.m. And
no, there is not.
No, there is not. And I happened to have gone to Carnegie Mellon, and we were very immersed in using email and internet stuff there, and so that sort of came with me when I moved out here to the West Coast. And so at 3 a.m, that's what I did. I got online and started searching and started meeting one by one other bereaved parents and realizing I wasn't alone and discovering that the Centering Corporation had actually been around for 15 years, but nobody in my world knew about it. My doctors, though they had been in OB care for 20 years, I don't know, long time, they had no resources in their office for families with this kind of birth outcome. They had never experienced it. Mm. And when we wrote the book, Mrs. Duck and the Woman, I took copies of the book to the doctor's office and asked them if they wanted to keep them on hand, for other families. And she looked at me and said, well, oh, honey, and thank you, and yes, of course we'll take them, but honestly, like, this never happens. Okay, just stick a knife in my
head.
Okay, whatever. It was her experience. That was their experience in that office. I left the book. Oh. I left. 6 months later, that same doctor stopped me one day and said, I really need to apologize to you. We have now given out all 10 of those books, and I need more of them.
Wow.
So I don't know what shifted.
Karma.
In the 20 years of her
practice. Yay for karma.
There, but yeah, you know.
Wow.
Just an awareness thing. It's people just don't, because if you don't have to look for it, you don't know it's there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I lost my question. I guess you keep answering my questions before I ask them, Kara.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm such a babbler.
I was just going to say, you know, have you gone back and educated, you know, these doctors that didn't have any resources, and you give them books. You just write books and you give them to them. So, I love that. So when you and I talked earlier before we set you up as a speaker for Healing Grief 101, we talked about going through programs that took people through the hero's journey and to triumph over hard times and things like that, and how that affected you. Would you talk about that, please?
Sure.
I find it completely fascinating.
Yeah, so, you know, the first few years after Dakota's death, we really received services. I mean, we really took in what we needed. But after a little while, it started to be time for me to give back. And so I started doing lots of different kinds of trainings, volunteer trainings and becoming a volunteer support group facilitator and moderator online for support group, and doing my Reiki certification over the course of several years, and doing my coaching certification over several years, which was, you know, involved the appreciative inquiry kind of space, and but was really keyed to the hero's journey and looking at the grief process, just because that's where my interest was. And my teacher, Shireen Zolno, who I trained with, was really willing to customize the certification to be about that for me, because she knew how important that was for me. And I have tremendous respect for Joseph Campbell, who did The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and Paul Reblo, who wrote Call to Adventure, and Carol Pearson, who wrote Awakening the Hero Within, and of course my own teachers and my own peers who were doing the Hero's Journey stuff. The Hero's Journey is an amazing tool. I love it. I've seen it do absolutely stunning things. And when it starts to be used as a prescription that you need to follow every step this way, and this is what should happen here, it bothers me. I'm troubled by it, and I'll tell you why. I got to the part of the hero's journey where you needed to identify the shadow, the demon, the beast, the dragon, the dark, right, the dark stuff. For me, of course, that was grief. So this dragon coming was grief. And the hero's going to encounter this dragon. Well, the traditional the philosophy behind the hero's journey says you slay the dragon. And so all the things I was reading and all the models presented to me and the kind of ways you step through it in workshops in person and stuff is, I mean, that's what you do. You slay the demon. You slay the dragon. I cannot tell you how every single cell in my body revolted at that. The metaphor of that type of violence, the blood dripping blade, after the amount of trauma we had been through, there was no way. It just was not going to happen. It was not going to go down that way. And for me, seeing the dragon coming and knowing that was grief, I wanted to come out from underneath the label of demon and hero. I wanted to be two entities looking at each other. I wanted to be curious about the demon. I wanted to know what grief wore when he showed up. I wanted to know, if grief took me dancing, what kind of music was he going to play? If grief showed up to dance barefoot and I asked him to put on shoes, what happened? Right?
And would they be chimney shoes or would they be clown shoes?
Exactly, you know? And if we just changed the dance floor, if we were outside in the forest dancing in the dirt and I brought grief into a ballroom with a wood floor, like, this was, you know, sense stuff. See, what does it see, look like, sound like, feel like, smell like? I had that right. level of curiosity, not a rejection, not a slaying. I had an intense desire to understand. So that really became my practice. That really became, you know, Sark talks a lot about make process instead of progress. What is the other book? The Saturated Self. I can't think of his name. In the Saturated Self book, he writes, it's about the process of answering, not finding the answer. Right?
Beautiful.
Right. So this became the thing for me, was the not having some particular outcome or some perfect product at the end, but the process. And staying with the process, because it's human. This one grief happened, and it was a major trauma, and it was not the only thing that was ever going to happen to me. My life, it's fabulous. My whole life changed. I was able to create a completely different life. I live a different lifestyle now. I love it. I love my husband. I love my family. And I'm human. I'm going to age. People are going to die. I deal with chronic health issues. It's just real. The ongoing process. I just stick with the process. That was really... That's what really...
And what have you noticed as a result of, to shorten it just a bit, dancing with grief, mm-hmm. If that's all right to say, what have you noticed as a result of that?
I was telling Karen earlier, it's a little bit like using nonviolent communication on yourself. So what I notice is that
wouldn't that be refreshing?
Right?
You know, beat yourself up on a daily basis. Yeah, right? Wow. What a concept.
It helps me to notice where I'm getting stuck in, in a pattern and a cyclical, and it's something that's just kind of stuck that with a label. This is awful. I can't deal with this. Let me think about this. Okay. To get out from underneath those labelings of things when they happen, where I get really stuck and there's no motion happening anymore, and ask what the need is, right? What need do I have at this moment that's keeping me sort of clawed in this place? And the metaphors for all of this came out of creativity for me, because I was already a writer and an artist. So the big metaphor was working a canvas, a multimedia canvas. I put a layer of gesso, I put a layer of acrylic, I put some mixed media stuff in there, I do a transfer, I put some other things. Somewhere in there, it gets really ugly, right? And I don't want to look at it. And I want it to go away. And I don't want anything to do with it. But my process became staying with it and coaxing it and being gentle with it and finding out what the next layer needed. And eventually a piece emerged that I was really happy with.
Yeah. I'm just processing.
Yeah. That became a metaphor for my life. I mean, there were days, and I still have days, where grief is really ugly and I want it to go away and I want to burn everything. Stay with it. Coax it. What's the need? You know, where's the little drop of the next thing? Something emerges. That's beautiful eventually. But it's a practice and a process. It doesn't stop for me. That's how it works for me.
Well, and I was sorely disappointed when I realized that after years of personal development, it never ends.
Yeah.
Mhm. Nothing just doesn't end, until you quit breathing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just keeps going. Karen, did you want to interject?
Yeah. Sorry, the sound cut out a little bit, I think. Yeah, I just wanted to bring in something that Cara and I were talking about earlier on. It is the whole, Cara, I just wondered if you could share something about how you and your husband coped, certainly in those early days. I'm very aware that we might have listeners who are you know, very early on in the stage of grieving the passing of a child, and you know, aren't anywhere near sort of down the pathway of feeling in a happier place with things. So I was just wondering whether it's possible for you to kind of go right back to the beginning and just talk a little bit about how your husband and you cope with the situation, because I do know that can be a very, very difficult problem for couples grieving the passing of a child.
Yeah. It's interesting. We got lots of input early on in the process. You know, kind of the first grief conference we went to, there was a doctor doing a presentation about how men grieve differently than women and stuff. And, what came out from that and what's come out from my work is really just people grieve differently. It really doesn't follow along gender lines. If I'm working with a lesbian couple and their child has died, they are not grieving exactly the same because they're both women. It just doesn't work that way. And so my husband and I got really clear really quickly about these things that weren't resonating with us and trying to language for ourselves how it was working for us. And it was that we were different people. And, you know, our two older living children were different people. And we were all grieving differently. And I don't say that to say, you know, then it's all up to the individual and it's all inside of us and we have to suck it up and figure it out. It's all happening in relationship. It's all happening in family and culture and religion or spirituality or, you know, it's happening on all those different levels. But what was the most helpful for us was to really, really get clear that we were all grieving differently, and to really try. And of course, we were not always successful, and there are lots and lots of messy, very ugly human periods where we were not very good at doing this. But to try and see what was happening when things were so different for each of us and say, okay, hang on one second. let's just hang on a second. What's happening here? You know, some need, constantly going back to this, some need is not being met. What is it? What is happening here? I think, unfortunately, we got very good at it much later, so that our kids, our older kids, are, you know, would probably tell you how much we stunk at it early. I think we're probably much better now. And, of course, they're out of the house and gone now. But it was always, always, always as a couple about trying to make that long trek back to each other. You know, if we were grieving really differently and there was a huge gap between us and there was, you know, an argument or silence, or there was something that was a big long trek, we got clear that we had to be willing to make the trek back to each other and find out what the needs were that weren't being met. And we do that to this day, I mean, with everything. So
that's beautiful.
To me that's a
true loving environment.
I was replying to you. just that it's very important to acknowledge that there are the ugly times as well and the difficult times too.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, Cara, can I ask you if you would mind as well, one of the things that you shared with me earlier, which I found very moving and I think might be very helpful and inspirational to any of our listeners, is the story of how you dealt with the first Christmas after Dakota's passing and what you asked of your friends and what you continue to this day.
Yeah. So part of that cascade of things that shattered was how things look after the death of a child, or the death of anyone, but, you know, whatever the grief is, things look different, and the holidays looked very different. There were a bunch of different things that informed us along the way, including, you know, talking with other people in support group and that kind of thing. But I had lots of experiences early on where I just had intense jealousy and envy of other families with living children, and with the way people would so readily acknowledge our other living children but would not say the name of the child who died and just didn't want to interact there at all. I got really clear really quickly that, yes, the first year's holidays were going to suck, but I also realized come the second Mother's Day, he still was going to be dead. Like, I got really clear really quick that this was going to be the rest of my life. I needed to figure out some things about how these holidays were going to look different so that we could live our lives, you know. And so one of the things we did at Christmas time was we asked people, if you're going to, you know, acknowledge and give gifts to our living children, will you please include, to our children, just no living, no dead, to our children, will you please acknowledge all of our children? So you might buy toys or clothes or whatever for the living children. Would you make a donation in the name of the child who died? And that's his Christmas gift or his, you know, whatever holiday time gift. And that has continued to this day. I have friends who, you know, every year for his birthday, they have trees planted. My mom always gives donations in his name on, you know, Christmas and Mother's Day and that kind of thing. It created a way for the family to be whole. So we weren't cutting off part of the family tree just because he wasn't physically here. We are creating a way for all of us to change our relationship. So we have all this time, love, money, and energy that goes to these different relationships. Now the physical aim of that relationship is gone. What do we do with it? So for my mom, for this grandchild, what does she want to do? Right? It opened up a space for her to be able to come up with something, whatever speaks to her. It just became a way of keeping really an open realization of the wholeness of the family. You know, if we're going to talk about holistic, let's talk about the whole picture. And that was it. We don't, you know, rip out the family tree branch that had Nana on it when our great grandmothers die. I mean, we still talk about her and name her. And why aren't we doing that for the children who die?
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. Wow. So we just have a little bit of time left, Kara. Mm-hmm. Would you please give our listeners some step-by-step? I know you kind of already went through how you danced with grief and how you knew that it wasn't going to be the last time you grieved about something because you were, you know, going to be living life. We really want to be clear to listeners on what action that they could take away from what you learned with your journey and what was extremely helpful for you. So could you just outline, you know, just a few points of what they could do with that and how they could do it?
Sure. I think I shared with you all, but if I didn't, let me know and I'll send you the link to it. There's a little worksheet I have out online called Stopping Yourself that is really just about starting with a notice, just noticing. So, you know, when you get to those places where you notice that you're stopping yourself, and for me, this would be those places where, you know, sort of like the record skipping, that I was in despair and I just can't. It was to notice where those things were happening. That was the first step. Once I noticed it, then it was about taking myself away from labeling it. You know, so it's not good, it's not bad, it's not this, it's not that. It's just set the labels outside the door and ask what the need is underneath it, right? And even in the darkest moments, right, where this is happening and I notice I've got this skipping record going about, oh, I have so much to do and I have to get up and I have to do this and I don't want to do this and I hate everybody and I don't want to look at my email, and I notice it's happening. I set all of those woulda, coulda, shouldas aside. And I ask what the need is. And sometimes the need really is, I just need to be in a blanket house for today. I need everyone to go away. and I need some blanket house time. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, sometimes it's completely different. Sometimes it's like, oh, I need a break. I need to go down to the water and stick my feet in the toes. Sometimes I, you know, our grandchildren don't live here on the island where we live, so sometimes it's, you know, get on Skype and have a conversation with one of the grandkids about something, and just what is it? What is the need? And then how can you serve that need? But that first step of really noticing where you are stopping yourself so that you can stop stopping yourself, that noticing worksheet is really probably the first place, the first steps that I would suggest starting.
And that's okay to email to our audience? Are you all right with
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. I love it that you put together a worksheet for us and for our listeners, and that you really have a heart's desire. I can just feel it for people to move forward, and I love that how innovative you are in your aspect of grief, and that you weren't willing to just accept what was out there in dealing with your grief, and that you were okay to blaze the trail and find a way that worked for you. And I think it's important. We've talked many times this week already about the choices that we have and realizing the choices that we have and we're empowered with. And so many times grief can seem like it disempowers us and just drops us to our knees so that we feel like we don't have those choices, but we do. We always do. And I thank you for reminding of us of that again.
Oh, my whole heart to you, Kimberly. Thank you, honey.
Karen, can you step in for a sec?
Yeah, thank you, Cara. It was really moving, and I, as with all of our speakers this week, we could carry on these calls for several hours, I think, with the issues that have come up within them. I think it's so wonderful, as I've been listening to you, it's just so wonderful to hear, you know, just your whole journey and your process and how you've dealt with something which was so deeply difficult because you just didn't know where any resources were or there weren't any resources. And I just hope that really inspires anybody who is at that really horrific starting point of having to come to terms with the passing of a child, because it truly is a devastating place to be. So thank you so much. Thank you for your offering as well. And just for our listeners, just to remind you, if you would like to connect with us either via email or via our Facebook page, Healing Grief 101, please do so. We're so here for you. I'm sure Cara is here for you as well. If you want
Absolutely.
To ask her any questions on the Facebook page, we're all here for you. So, again, thank you so much, Cara, and thank you to all our listeners. And we just want to send out a huge, huge dose of love to everybody this evening. So with that, I wish you all a very peaceful and loving day, evening, or afternoon, wherever it is for you as you're listening. Thank you very much, and God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kara, and thank you, listeners. We appreciate it. And remember, too, not only to connect with us on Facebook, but you will have the opportunity to hear this and the other recordings for 24 hours for free. Be sure to check your email for those recording links, and then we will be giving the opportunity for you to have these as your permanent collection to refer to at the end of this virtual retreat. So very nominal fee will be charged for those, but we do want to honor you to have these in your personal library for all of time so that you can go back for the inspiration and the learning and the step-by-step processes that are wonderful speakers have been providing. And then Karen and I will be offering group coaching to help you through the holidays to ensure that these holidays are actually more joyful than maybe what you've been experiencing in the past, or maybe you're even dreading them this year, and we want to provide that support for you. And we'll be giving private coaching, VIP coaching, to a selected few. If that is of interest to you, please reach out to us. We, again, want to remind you that we absolutely love you. You are not alone. We hold you in our hearts, in our prayers, in our meditations, and we are thrilled. Absolutely thrilled that for such a time as this that we are able to support you and bring Healing Grief 101 to you and your friends and your loved ones. We thank you, and you have a wonderful day, evening, or morning wherever you may be. Take care.
Kimberly, this is Kara. I'm going to press star 9 to stop the recording, okay?